So just before beginning, I wanted to just say one small quality of Srila Prabhupada so that we can hopefully imbibe his mood and somehow or other please him. And I'm taking this from the little book you might have seen, Srila Prabhupada's Beautiful Transcendental Qualities. So this quality, poetic. Srila Prabhupada was poetic, not only in the literary sense, as evidenced by his beautiful poems glorifying his spiritual master and Lord Krishna, and of course in his beautiful translations of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Bhagavad Gita, etc., Chaitanya Charitamrita, etc., etc. He was poetic. Actually, he mentioned that at one point, while he was still Grihastha, and he was writing for the magazine of his spiritual master, that his godbrothers had given him the title Kaviraj, poet. But he was also poetic in every principle, every aspect of his personality as well. His gesturing, his walking, talking, singing, smiling, dancing, and worshiping were all done with natural poetic grace as befitting a swan-like pure devotee of the Lord. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation by His Divine Grace. He who exists internally and externally, at the beginning and end of everything and of all living beings, as that which is enjoyable and as the enjoyer of everything, superior and inferior, is the supreme truth. He always exists as knowledge and the objective knowledge, as expression and the objective understanding, as darkness and as light. Thus he, the Supreme Lord, is everything. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Here, the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, is explained. It is also explained in the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, Aham Evasham Evagre. The Supreme Lord existed in the beginning. He exists after the creation and maintains everything after the destruction. And after destruction, everything merges in him, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Prakritim Yanti Mamikyam. Thus, the Supreme Lord is actually everything. In the conditioned state, we are bewildered in our understanding. But in the perfect stage of liberation, we can understand that Krishna is the cause of everything. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachid Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Brahmasamhita 5.1. This is the perfection of knowledge. Om Agyantamirandasya Gnana Sakalaya Chakshum Ritam Jena Tasme Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayavacha Patitanam Pavamyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. One time in Paris, Srila Prabhupada was making a presentation, and the devotees had obtained a very respectable and large venue, and they had brought to this place and put on the stage for Srila Prabhupada to sit on his enormous Vyasa sign. So the people in Paris in particular, France in general, but Paris in particular, they don't take kindly to people who are not French, and they don't take kindly to authority at all, French or other, French, foreign or otherwise. So during Prabhupada's presentation, there was a few people in the audience who were heckling. Heckling means, you know, making little comments and not being respectful. After the presentation, then, of course, questions were asked for. And someone from this group of hecklers said, "Why are you sitting on this big throne?" You know, they were definitely not inquiring submissively. But Srila Prabhupada answered in a very nice way. He said, "Oh, you would like to sit here? Yes, this is Vyasa sign. It is the seat of Vyas, compiler of the Vedas, knower of the Vedas. So if you become like Vyas, then you can also sit here." So he very effectively, you know, quiet. In fact, they left. But I, you know, every time I think of that, I'm thinking, what am I doing sitting here? That is the point. So please forgive me for sitting here. One other, I have a small request, which may or may not be appropriate, but sometimes you take an opportunity. So an opportunity here is many wonderful devotees, godbrothers, godsisters present. And taking advantage of the opportunity, because sometimes opportunities pass, and then afterwards you're thinking, why did I let that pass? My family is by and large not Krishna conscious. They have not been inimical, they're just totally indifferent and not inclined towards spiritual life, with the exception of my mother, who may not be inclined in a practicing way, but by reading the books of my godbrothers and godsisters, which she found easier to read than Prabhupada's books. So she has read many books and enjoys very much the books written by godbrothers and godsisters. And this has given her a great appreciation of Srila Prabhupada and an understanding that she is not this body and that she'll have to depart this body. And she has taken that very seriously, particularly after she read Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's book, Die Before You Die. So she talks about, you know, leaving the body. She doesn't talk about dying. So she has that kind of understanding, and she's making some preparations just by getting rid of things that she doesn't need around her. And she will, just a few days ago, she was 91 years old. I have a brother who is a bit younger than me. And a couple of months ago, he went to the doctor after experiencing some pains. But they, for a long time, he had been experiencing some slight pain. I asked him to describe it. He said it was like hunger pain, nothing too great. But suddenly one day, big, huge pain just attacked and overcame him. Went to the hospital emergency room, and they couldn't figure it out. Come back the next day, you know, how they pull out all their things, MRIs and this, that, the other thing, and found out that he had pancreatic cancer, which is a incurable, aggressive, quick-death cancer, because by the time you find out about it, it's pretty much too late to do anything, even if you could do something, which you really can't. So for the first time in, we're not a very close family, or at least I'm not close with my family, so our conversations are decades apart. So for the first time, I had a conversation with my brother, and it was relating to Krishna consciousness, and he was actually expressing appreciation for the fact that I was a member of this movement. And he told me actually that sometimes he mentions to people that he has a sister who's a full-time Hare Krishna. And he seems to know a little bit about Srila Prabhupada because he mentions Srila Prabhupada and has some appreciation in the way he mentioned. So we had a conversation for the first time about the meaning of life. So yesterday I got a letter from my sister. I had written to her, asked for a little update, and she came back. She was really upset. She's angry, and you know, she was telling, because it's escalating very quickly, and it's really one of these any day now situations. But at the same time, the materialistic doctors are, you know, trying to slow down what's happening. Like, they know they can't save him, but maybe we can give him a few more days, a few more hours, a few more minutes. But in doing that, it's really hellish. You know, the treatments are hellish. They just pump you full of chemicals that derange your mind and make you feel, you know, to get rid of one symptom, you get another symptom. So that's really disturbing. But some friends of his gave him the address of an acupuncture doctor who was a Chinese person. And they took a collection so that he could see this person. And this person has some conception of body and soul, not just... So the way he's doing his treatment is he's including what my brother calls little lessons, you know, little life lessons, little hints on how to ride out this storm. So that actually gives him some relief, whereas the materialistic, you know, the totally body doctors are just torturing him. So my sister is very upset about this, and she, in her words, she goes, "It sucks," you know, like that's how she can describe it. And she's mad, and, you know, she's angry, she's upset, and she's sad, etc. And I can understand this. I took a leap of faith yesterday, and I wrote her a response that, trying to address in a realistic way what's happening, the departure of the soul from a temporary body. But what I want to ask all of you is for your prayers, not in some mundane way, of course, you know, my brother will be saved, but yes, I want him to be saved. I want him to somehow have an opportunity to capture Krishna, or for Krishna to capture him, and that perhaps in his next lifetime, maybe he'll be here at Bhaktivedanta Manor or some other ISKCON center, and that, you know, my sister will have some understanding of the soul. And that my mother in her last years will also continue in her favorable mood. Actually, when this whole, when I first found out about this, my concern was for my mother, because I thought, oh my God, you know, she's going to lose her son. This is the second one. You know, parents are very devastated when a child departs before them. So I was more worried about my mother, but she is actually not happy about it, but she has some little glimpse, and I understand this is because of her association with Krishna consciousness. So my prayer, she could also get further association as she did, goes into her final years also. I would very much appreciate your prayers. And not just for my family, but there are many devotees who are going through transition stages, or family members of devotees who are going through very intense attacks on their material body, and even though we know, okay, this body's a temporary ship, you still feel what's going on, and it's very devastating sometimes. So if some prayers in your heart to Lord Nisringadeva and Srila Prabhupada, to please reach out to these people, I would be very grateful. So yesterday, Hari Sari's wonderful class on Srila Prabhupada, and he referred to Srila Prabhupada's pamphlet that he was passing out when he arrived, and before he arrived, actually. And in the pamphlet, he was speaking about the 60 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam as if it were a done deal, you know. And, you know, that was such, you know, such a bold way of presenting his mission, actually. Just like when he was, everybody knows the story, how he sat on the park bench in Central Park, and some unknown person sat down, and he started speaking to him how he had temples all over the world, and he didn't even have a storefront in New York City yet, you know, but he had temples and devotees all over the world. Because he was connected with Krishna, he was connected with the future, so therefore he was really connected to what was going to be happening. You know, so in other words, he had some vision. So I was appreciating that class yesterday, and then I came and I came across, I was looking up, looking into this wonderful Bindu Khatamrita that comes from Madhava Prabhu out of Bhuvaneshwar, and a new issue just came, so I was just kind of looking through that. And he had a series, he always has something about Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada's comments and different things. So the comments this time were the most important thing. And he had a list of situations where Prabhupada said, this is the most important thing, or the most important thing. So number one was from 20th February of 1968 to Brahmananda. And he said, my special mission is to complete the Srimad Bhagavatam in 60 volumes. So the most important thing on the part of the International Society is to organize sales propaganda for all the books that you are publishing. So just that wonderful connection was there. He also said, there was quite a few, but he also mentioned that we must be ideal in our we must be ideal Krishna conscious persons, and then we can attract others. You know, sometimes we'll have all these meetings and discussions and strategic plannings how we're going to, like, get people and attract them. But Prabhupada put it so simply, we must become ideal Krishna conscious persons, and then we will attract others. And then he mentioned that the most important thing is to remain 100% in the service of Radha and Krishna. So, anyways, here he is mentioning the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, is explained, and it is also explained in the Shatra Shloki of the Bhagavatam. Aham Evasham Evagri, the Supreme Lord existed in the beginning, he exists after the creation and maintains everything, and after destruction, everything merges in him. So, this is also, just wait. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokunanda Ki Jai. One of the bewildering aspects of Krishna, we have Krishna here before us in his beautiful two-handed form. We hear about Krishna and his transcendental pastimes, and then we're hearing this very intense description how he is existing in the beginning, the end, and creation, maintaining everything, etc. So how do you see him in that form? And I came across also a wonderful commentary, again from the Bindu Bhagavatamrita, that by Srinivas Acharya on the Srimad Bhagavatam, on the Chatur Shlok. So he's harmonizing these apparent contradictions where you see Krishna in this very grand, majestic form, and at the same time, two hands, flute, playing, running around like a so-called ordinary personality. So I thought I would like to read this. It's not too long, but it really coincides with this, and it gives some wonderful expressions of this point. So once again, majestic Krishna is demonstrating the pastime of his simultaneous omnipresence and yet localized, visible yet invisible nature. The five elements, earth, water, fire, and air, and ether, exhibit this quality simultaneously, omnipresent and localization. Conceivability and inconceivability as follows. In its omnipresent and inconceivable form, earth is manifest as the underlying substance of the infinite universes. whereas in its localized and conceivable form, earth is manifest in the form of chunks of soil, etc. In the omnipresent and inconceivable form, water is manifest as the Karani ocean, which sustains the universe, whereas in its localized and conceivable form, water conforms to the shape of our daily utensils, such as glasses and cups, swimming pools, etc. And it is visualized in that way. In its omnipresent and inconceivable form, fire is manifest as the gleam of the Brahma Jyoti, etc. And in its localized and conceivable form, fire is manifest in the form of the flame burning on the ghee lamps, etc. It is in its omnipresent and inconceivable form, air is present everywhere and around us. And in its localized and conceivable form, it manifests itself in the form of wind, which makes itself visible by carrying dust and other objects within itself. In its omnipresent and inconceivable form, ether manifests as the all-pervading sky, whereas in its localized and conceivable form, it takes on the shape of various containers, since containers limit the sky by restricting it in a certain shape. So then he goes on to say, this is off from Srinivasacharya. Krishna goes on to say, it is me whose omnipresence and inconceivability is described in the Bhagavatam 10, 9, 13, and 14. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no interior or exterior, no beginning and no end. It is me whose locationalized and conceivability is described in the next verse. He is bound to the mortar, just like an ordinary child. So you go from that totally inconceivable, you know, form to a child tied to a mortar, to the conceivable. In this form as Virata Rupa, he is the underlying soul of the universe, omnipresent and inconceivable, whereas he can be conceived in his various two-handed and four-handed forms, where he can be conceived in his two-handed and four-handed forms. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu supports this fact by saying, he who is omnipresent and all-pervasive is now playing in his fully manifested form within the limits of the arms of Mother Yasoda. So, how wonderful is this when you think of the inconceivable, the all-pervasive, being contained within the limits of the arms of Mother Yasoda. I mean, it's amazing. This simultaneous harmonization of opposing natures. And again, I mean, this is such a perfect way of expressing the situation, the simultaneous harmonization of opposing natures is possible only by his infinite, inconceivable potencies. Furthermore, when these five elements, earth, water, air, fire, ether, etc., are in their dissolved states, they exist only in their tanmatra forms. So ether exists only as sound, air exists only as sound and touch, fire exists as touch, sound, and form, and water exists as touch, sound, form, and smell. Taste. Earth exists as touch, sound, form, taste, and smell. So in these states, they are known as pravishta, invisible, and they're conceived only by yogis, are, of course, advanced devotees of Krishna. And in their, so this is invisible, they're only perceived by the yogis, devotees. And when the five elements are in their manifest, are their non-dissolved stage, or their manifested states, then the five elements are visible to everyone. Everyone can see that way, you know, earth, air, etc. So similarly, the Supreme Lord in the form of his Virata Rupa is inconceivable. Only the yogis can see him. or someone like Arjuna, who has been given special eyes. But in his two-handed and his four-handed forms, he is conceivable to one and all. So the of course, even that conception in our conditioned state is somewhat challenged. I mean, he mercifully appears before us, standing before us, and at the same time, there's like this transparent veil that we're looking through. Here is Krishna. You know, just like if I say, you know, here's Chandramali Swami, and he's right there, and, you know, there's no, there's nothing in between. And at the same time, there is nothing between us and Krishna, and at the same time, due to our lack of fully manifested realization, there's like this little veil. Here's Krishna, the deity. This is Krishna. We're telling ourselves, this is Krishna, but still we're seeing sometimes maybe a marble form or a brass form or a stone form. But then we're saying, no, this is Krishna. So that transparency, there's a little veil. The transparency isn't fully opened, even though we're seeing the fullness, the actual full realization of Krishna's presence is still to come. So the omnipresence of Krishna is proven in the following Bhagavad Gita verses. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. This is 10:42. And the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. 1861. Now the simultaneous localized presence of Krishna is also supported by the following verses. Those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond material nature. 7:14. But, O son of Kunti, demoniac persons can never approach me. 16:20. In these two verses, the word mam, me, should be taken to mean Krishna's manifested two-handed form. So when Krishna is speaking like this, he is speaking about himself in the most personal state, in the two-handed form. And furthermore, the voice that comes from Krishna's body is proof of his inconceivability. The same voice, so when Krishna is speaking, this is further proof. Here he is, he's real. And at the same time, when the voice comes from the sky, the Satyavahi, in other words, voice of the sky, similar to the one that Kamsa heard, now this disembodied voice coming from the sky. So that's proof of his invincibility, or his inconceivability, sorry. You know, that you're hearing him, so he must be there, but you can't see him. But still you're hearing, he must be there. Inconceivable. And further proof of the inconceivability is given in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, that the Lord eternally displays divine pastimes. So he's eternally displaying his divine pastime. So he must be present, and all of the time, not just sometimes or occasionally. And in that particular verse, the word ananta, endless, is specifying the limitlessness, that there's just no limit to Krishna's pastimes. On the other hand, Sridhar Swami's commentary says, Krishna displayed pastimes first in Gokula, then in Mathura, and finally in Dwarka. And this statement, which is indicative of Krishna's earthly pastimes, is a proof of the inconceivability of Krishna's pastimes. So in these pastimes, he appears in some place, in other words, there's a location, and he disappears in some place, another location. So other proofs of Krishna's pastimes being eternal and inconceivable are, from the Bhagavatam, the city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. That's 10:128. And then the husband of the goddess of fortune has taken his birth and is wandering in his childhood in Mathura. So both of these verses indicate Krishna's pastimes are eternal and inconceivable, and particularly in the verse where he's wandering in his childhood in Mathura, this wandering The word chaitetti, it means wandering. So it's used in the present tense. So it's not something he was wandering or he will be, but he is wandering. So it means it's going on now. We're sitting here, Bhaktivedanta Manor, and Krishna is wandering in Mathura. So inconceivable. So this was something that I hope you enjoyed hearing from Srila Srinivas Acharya. So far in this, what is the time frame? What? Pardon? Okay. In this chapter up until now, there has been many wonderful lessons, as is indicated by the header, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. And one of the first points was commented on by Srila Prabhupada. Mayavadi basya sunilo hoya sarvahasya, that association with the Mayavad philosophy, by associating, if one associates with the Mayavad philosophy, one's life is doomed. So it's very important that we somehow become fully convinced of Krishna's presence and this inconceivable personality, that even though that aspect of him exists, that inconceivable aspect that is limitless and that is in everything, without and outside of everything, etc., is there. As devotees, we want to go after the conceivable, which is also inconceivable quality of Krishna. To think of the Supreme Lord as a small boy wandering around Mathura, as a small boy crawling through the dust and the cow dung and the cow urine of Maharaj Nanda's courtyard. And this is the personality of Godhead. So this inconceivable two-handed blue face, smiling, playing a flute, personality, we need to have that personal connection, just as when I speak to any one of you and we have a conversation, then we can have that same conversation with Krishna. One time in San Francisco, and Srila Prabhupada had been away, and when he came back, was one young devotee, Saradiya, who's, I think this picture here of the of Lord Chaitanya's six-armed form was painted by her. She was very young, and she had some questions, and she was asking questions to Srila Prabhupada, and suddenly he stopped and he said, "Just see this young girl, she's so eager for Krishna." And then he looked at her and he said, "If you like, Krishna will also kiss you." So, I mean, so personal. I mean, not only was Srila Prabhupada personal, but he was making Krishna so personal. And he was expressing on this eagerness. So this morning I was listening, as I was getting ready to come to Mangalarti, listening to a tape, and he was speaking about this eagerness, and suddenly, you know, he was just speaking in a normal voice, and then he suddenly roared, "We have to be eager for Krishna!" It's like blasted out. You know, and we're thinking, yeah, we like to be eager for Krishna, you know. So we're not going to see him face to face otherwise, you know, he'll remain inconceivable. So, one of the other lessons that was coming out, as an obstruction to gaining Krishna consciousness, Pasuhu himself, by killing animals unnecessarily. And Prabhupada commented, unless one is merciless, has no mercy, one cannot sacrifice animals. In other words, only a person that is devoid of mercy can really kill animals. And he said, either in the name of religion or for food. Well, this is clear, and he wrote it. And he said, then he made it very clear, there is no question of killing animals in Krishna consciousness. You know. I know sometimes for a fact that some devotees actually think, well, it's okay to kill creatures that are attacking, like, you know, you're trying to have a garden, and in comes all kinds of things, you know, from under, you know, some of them fly over, you have a fence, they'll fly over the fence, or they'll jump over the fence, or they'll come from the ground underneath and, like, just, you know, dig a hole and come up. So devotees get really aggravated, you know. I think it must be okay to, like, they're attacking, you know, but Prabhupada's no question of killing animals in Krishna consciousness. Actually, he said the Krishna conscious movement, you know, so he made it really clear in the Krishna conscious movement there is no question of killing animals. So. Then he, in a couple of points he had made about spreading Krishna consciousness, so he said, all members of the Krishna consciousness movement, and he put, whether grihastha or sannyas, should try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement with determination, you know, and Krishna will supply all necessities. So when I was reading that statement, I was thinking, you know, how in the beginning, I remember hearing Srila Prabhupada say to us that Krishna will care for everyone. Krishna does care for everyone. Krishna cares for the big elephant and the small ant. They are eating, are they not? So why not care for his devotee? And I was very convinced by this argument that I wouldn't have to worry about my maintenance and substance if I just remained serving Krishna. You know. And actually, I could see from practical experience how true this is. Practical experience in the negative, then I left Krishna's service. Then I was struggling like a dog, you know, eating vomit, eating stool, objectionable lifestyle. And as soon as one put down trying to maintain oneself as a primary source of activity and becomes fully engaged in Krishna's service, immediately there is nothing to be concerned about. Krishna's taking care. Of course, if we have, you know, if we're thinking, well, I need that, I must have that, you may or may not get it. But if we have some faith that in the service, whatever I need will be provided, certainly it comes, you know, even without any endeavor. Even I had a kind of an amazing experience last year, as my vehicles were just, that they're kind of old, they were like really falling apart, to the point where whenever I was driving, I was looking on the side of the road in case I'd have to pull over, and it was just like one eye ahead, one eye to the side of the road, and, you know, hoping it wouldn't happen on a curve or some place where I wouldn't be able to pull over, and what if there's a big truck behind me and smash, and I was like, kind of thinking like that. Finally, it was ridiculous, and devotees were asking me to come to Columbus, and at that point I just couldn't drive that car anymore. I said, okay, I'll try to borrow a car, and then every time I tried to borrow a car, something happened that I couldn't go. Of course, what I found out later, the reason that happened, that I was trying to go there for Radhastami, and the devotees were trying to keep me in New Vrindavan, so they would say I could borrow the car, but then no one couldn't have it. So then, finally I got a phone, I just said, look, it's just not going to happen now, so, you know, and I was thinking, you know, I don't need a car. Maybe Krishna's trying to give me another lifestyle, you know, do something else in another way. I remember Chandramali Swami used to have this van that he would go everywhere with, and when he would start traveling, he'd have to figure out where to put the van and how to take care of it, and eventually he just, like, let go of that van, and now he moves faster than ever all over the place. So I was thinking about that, and I said, yeah, maybe I should just, like, you know, Hari Bol and figure out another way to get around, or maybe I'm supposed to just stay more in New Vrindavan, I don't know. And I was thinking like that, and the phone rings, and it's a devotee who was trying to get me, and he goes, I've decided that I'm going to help you get a new car. And I had been looking for a used car, but they were so, even used cars were too expensive. I couldn't afford a used car. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe he wants to give me a loan or something like that. I said, okay, well, first talk to your wife about this, because I know this devotee sometimes is very generous, but he doesn't talk to his wife beforehand. And, you know, I mean, she's generous too, but sometimes they have, you know, personal obligations like the rent to their house or their mortgage or, you know, car payment, whatever. And he's just given all their money away. So I said, you know, okay, well, maybe think about it, talk to your wife and get back to me. And I didn't think about it anymore. And a couple of days later, I get a phone call. Says, can you be in Akron? Or no, can you get to Dayton, you know, by 8 o'clock? I said, why do I have to get to Dayton by 8 o'clock? Because there's a car for you. Oh, God. It's 4 o'clock. It takes 4 hours to get to Dayton. It means I have to borrow a car, get a driver, somebody who can drive the other, if I'm going to pick up another car, get, you know, get back. And it's pouring rain outside. I walked out of my office. I said, well, this is a test. If I can't find anybody, it's not meant to be. And I walked out. Bhakti Kim just walks by, and I said, hey, can you, do you have your license? Yeah. Can you drive to Dayton with me? Sure. Okay, well, okay, but I still had to get a car. So I walk into Jayashree's office. I said, yeah, can I borrow your car? And I made a mistake, and I said, I have to go to Akron. I got the two mixed up. And Akron's just like a couple hours. She goes, oh, sure, okay, you know. So we go to where we go, and we find, we get to Dayton. It's totally pitch dark. It's a big, because nighttime now, pouring rain. It's a big, huge car dealer. You know, new car dealers also have their used cars. So this lady comes up. I was told to ask for this lady. I asked for this lady, and she comes and says, would you like to see your car? I said, okay. And we go out, and it's like so dark, and it's all raining. She takes me out to this car, which I can't quite see because it's so dark, but she opens the door. And when she opens the door, I realize this is not a used car. It's like a brand new car. So I was kind of stunned because it's not what I was expecting at all. And I was standing in the rain. She goes, don't you like it? I said, no, no, it's very nice. You know, do you want to drive it? I said, oh, okay. So I got in, and only, you know, they have your speedometer. Like the last car I got had like, I don't know how many hundreds of miles on it. You know? This one had like 4.5 miles on it. So, you know, without any endeavor, a car, something was provided. And then I had the answer to, well, what am I supposed to be doing next? I got the idea, okay, keep doing what you're doing. It's okay. You know. So Krishna provides for the devotee. He provides for the ant. He provides for the elephant. You know, we just have to accept what he provides, how he provides it. You know. And then one of the other interesting lessons that he mentioned in here, I like this one that Prabhupada said: a true brahmana is always satisfied. Yesterday, Harisari Prabhu was speaking about how Prabhupada initially wanted to create a society of brahmanas. And Prabhupada mentioned this very often. So true brahmana is always satisfied. And he says, even with nothing to eat, he can drink a little water and be satisfied. So I thought, wow, how far am I from being a brahmana, you know? I remember when I got my Brahmin initiation, I couldn't even understand what was going on. Like, we were on our way to London, actually. We stopped over in Montreal, and we get to this temple, which was a former bowling alley, and I remember Hemavati came up and she said, you're going to get Brahmin initiation. And we hadn't heard about it yet. They'd already had one, but, you know, we didn't have the internet to get all the news, good and bad, across the world, you know, in an instant. So we hadn't heard about it. And I said, what does that mean? And she goes, it means you have more mantras to chant. You know, I just had a baby daughter. You know, my kid was like the heart barely 6 weeks old. I was finding it really difficult to get these 16 rounds done. So the concept of more mantras to chant was not appealing to me at all. Anyway, so Prabhupada said, you know, he can drink a little water and be satisfied. Then he writes, this is only a matter of practice. So I thought that was really wonderful. Then he went on, he said, we can conquer hunger, we can conquer lust, we can conquer anger, But there's one thing we cannot conquer. Anybody know what that one thing is? Huh? No? Kind of. One try. It says greed. Greed. He goes, he explains, and if you're hungry, you can eat something, you'll be satisfied. Of course, it comes back, but you eat something, you're satisfied. You can conquer lust. You can conquer anger. It says, but a greedy person, whatever they get, they're going to want more. So greed is never satiated. But, he said, Tatra logyam ekalam mulam. The best greed is Krishna greed. And that greed will liberate us. So, end there. Hare Krishna. Anybody have any comments, or probably can have some corrections?